Hare Krishna. I'm really honored to be here with all of you wonderful and illustrious Vaishnavas, Vaishnavis. I see so many senior people. I just met Yadu Prabhu and Mother Tarini. Been devotees longer than I've been alive. They've been living here almost as long as I've been alive. And so I also have some of my teachers are here. You can't hear me? Yeah, I know. I'm trying to do the sadhu thing. I'm trying to do the sadhu profile thing. Anyway, I'm not super attached to PowerPoint. I don't even need a mic, as Maharaj just mentioned. So I've got something that I'll do with the PowerPoint because they managed to get half my presentation, but I'll just do the rest. Use it as notes for my computer. Maharaj asked me to give a talk here some time back, and he asked me to come up with a title. So I came up with a title, which was, did Srila Prabhupada want Varnashram? And if he did want it, what did he mean when he said Varnashram? And so as I started preparing, things took on a little bit of a different, they took on a little bit of, I guess, just a little bit of a different spin. And so the title I had up here on my screen was Using Hermeneutics to Understand Srila Prabhupada's Varied Statements on Varnashram Dharma. So just to gauge everybody's kind of, I don't know most of you. Who's familiar with the term hermeneutics? Raise your hand if you know hermeneutics. All right. Hermeneutics is the formal study of how to interpret a text. Now, there's the actual interpretation of a text, which is called exegetics. And so these two things work together. And this is also part of our tradition. It goes under the name Mimamsa, which you guys must be familiar with. Who's heard of Mimamsa? Raise your hand. All right, there we go. Why don't we go with Mimamsa? We are part of the Vedanta tradition, also known as Uttara Mimamsa. Mimamsa means examining. And so Mimamsakas were examiners of sacred texts. So many of the things that we learn in our tradition come from Mimamsa. Jiva Goswami uses it liberally in Tattva Sandarbha. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, you know, when Mahaprabhu was arguing with the Prakashananda Saraswati, and he told him that he's not taking the Mukhya Britti of that verse in the Upanishads, Om Purnamada Purnamidam, and he was taking the Gauna Britti, and he critiques him for taking an indirect meaning instead of a direct meaning. That's straight Mimamsa. They came up with a bunch of rules for how you read the Veda. And so the Mimamsakas, they read the Sanhitas and Brahmanas primarily, and they interpreted them. But the rules they came up with were used by Vedanta, which interpreted the Upanishads. So in many ways, we're the same school. We're a school of textual hermeneutics that looks very closely at what the meaning of something is. And there's rules we go by. Like the rules like, you know, a later statement supersedes a former statement. You should take the direct meaning unless the direct meaning doesn't make any sense. If there's a number of statements about a topic, they generally hold sway over something, you know, where there's only a single statement. Even pratyaksha, anuman, and shabda, that comes from Mimamsa. So Parushaya, that they're not created by man, that they're eternal. That's from the Mimamsakas. Anyway, sometimes you get a fairly simple topic, like, should you chant 16 rounds a day? And Prabhupada's on record, unequivocally, in so many places, being consistent and kind of like, that he expects all his disciples to chant 16 rounds. You take a vow when you get initiated to chant 16 rounds. And so it's like very clear that this is something which is, for all intents and purposes, it's indisputable. So, with a topic like that, you don't really have to get ultra sophisticated with hermeneutics, because there's just one voice, and it's extremely consistent. You can even just by going to the four regulative principles, things get a little dicier. You know, is chocolate a breach of the regulative principle, no intoxication? Let's be non-rhetorical. What do you guys think? Is eating chocolate breaking the regulative principle against intoxication? I'm asking that question. Okay, we got no's and yeses, which is fantastic, because if you think about that, we're a room full of Flavor Aid drinking Hare Krishnas. If you know that cultural reference, we're a room full of dyed-in-the-wool, sold out, fully convinced members. And something as simple and basic to our tradition as the, you know, prohibition against intoxication, I ask about chocolate, and I got several people saying no and several people saying yes. That's quite astounding. Hermeneutics would be sort of how you guys came up with your answers. My guru told me it was okay. You follow? Prabhupada said it wasn't. Prabhupada ate chocolate on occasion. Prabhupada was against caffeine, but technically the active ingredient in chocolate is theobromine. All these kind of like logics that you may employ to answer the question would be hermeneutics. Then when you get into it and you actually look at a text and you've got all this kind of background information that you're almost using unbeknownst to yourself, you're engaged in exegetics. You're unpacking a text. It's a very simple explanation. It's not merely that hermeneutics is theory and exegetics is application. A proper description of these terms is a little more involved. But I thought that if we were going to meaningfully answer the question, did Prabhupada want Varnashram, and if so, what did he mean? It's almost like those questions by themselves automatically necessitate us having a hermeneutical discussion. Because if you think chocolate is a controversial issue, it's like not with Varnashram Dharma. I personally think that Varnashram Dharma is the most paradoxical topic in the Hare Krishna movement today. Paradoxical in the sense that Prabhupada made statements, like extreme statements, and I collected a ton of them for you guys. But he made, we can just start. I did want to actually define the term varna, ashram, and dharma. That varna comes from vr dhatu. We say vri, but it's actually incorrect. It's vr. It's a, when you use r as a vowel, it's r. Vr dhatu and dhr dhatu for dharma. Dharma is what holds you up and makes you who you are. It's the aspect or function of yourself that carries your existence. Like Girivara Dhari, the Krishna who lifted Govardhan Hill, Dhari is from the same dhr dhatu. And then varna comes from vr, which means to color, to paint. Actually, if you look at varna, the way it occurs in the oldest Vedic texts, it does not refer specifically to our varnas exclusively. It has a much more variegated meaning. Actually, varna is also used to describe things. Varna yati, also you're describing things. And then ashram. Ashram comes from shram. Like shrama eva hi kevalam, hard work, or the shraman movement, which is kind of like a subversive movement to the Vedic Brahmanas, the Shramans and the Avadhuts and the Kshatriyas, kind of wild-haired, crazy-behaved sadhus on the fringes of Vedic society. The Shramans were another group. Shram means hard work, labor, exertion. And so ashram is a place where you go to take rest from hard work. It's a home. Okay, so I did that. I gave a little kind of... I had a whole thing, but we won't do it. I'm sorry? Vr. Even Indian pundits, they say vri. But vri is actually r being a semi-vowel and I is the verb. And so when you see r existing as a vowel, it's pronounced r, like earth. We actually do this in English, we just don't admit it. But earth and dirt, r, that's a vowel. Re, the I is the vowel, and the R is a semi-vowel. Y, L, V, and R, semi-vowels. Oh, coloring, painting, classification, a way of kind of like designating one thing. So the meaning derives very nicely. But you know, like varna chitra is like, you know, colored paintings, painting with colors. Which fits actually nice with the varnas, because sometimes the varnas are described as red, white, yellow, and black. That's an old description of the varnas too. The brahmanas are white, the shudras are black. That definitely doesn't play well in an egalitarian society. Of course, Krishna's black, so there you go. We're doing okay. That's a primary meaning of Krishna. Primary meaning of Krishna is black. It's not a secondary meaning. It's a primary dictionary definition of Krishna. Okay. So, here's Prabhupada on December 30th, 1968. And I don't like to read lots of texts, but the only way to do hermeneutics is to kind of get into text and start to discuss how you would go about unpacking them. So it's just what I'm going to do. I got some lighter stuff we can do also, but it's going to get a little thick. It's just the only way to really unpack what Prabhupada said. Here's Prabhupada. The end of 1968. Now you cannot again introduce this system of varnashram. It is not possible. Here he is in the teachings of Lord Kapila. Although we may try to revive the perfect varnashram system, it's not possible in this age. And this is just a sample. I've got a dozen or so statements with this weight behind them. With this kind of weight behind them. And here's Prabhupada again. Therefore, varnashram is required, so varnashram should be introduced all over the world. Again, then we have to introduce this varnashram dharma. It must be done perfectly, and it is possible. It is not possible. It is not possible. So he said in the first two quotes, it is possible. If the process of Varnashram is introduced, even in the stage of Kali, the situation of Satyuga can be invoked. The Hare Krishna movement or Krishna consciousness movement is meant for this purpose. That's like a whole other level of commitment from Prabhupada. It's kind of basic to our existence. And of course, now this whole thing, like, it's not possible in the age, and like, oh, it's the age. It's like, Prabhupada completely nullifies that. So, what do you do with this? By the way, there's another term called eisegesis, a more modern term, which is where you kind of come up with what you want to say and then you like sort of figure out a way to text to say what you want it to say. And kind of say anything. And so, you know, what do you do with these? And Prabhupada's not kind of offering a nuanced vision. He's, by the way, Krishna does this too. Krishna says in the Gita, he says, Matstani sarva bhutani, all beings are in me. And then the next line out of Krishna's mouth is, Natcha matstani sarva bhutani, and also, they are not in me. He directly contradicts himself in the ninth chapter of the Gita. And then, you know, in almost like a, like in a playful way, he says, Pasha me yoga maishwaram, behold my mystic opulence. All things are in me, they're not in me. This is on that level. It's like Upanishadic. It's so, these statements are so diametrically opposed to one another. So how do we sort through this? And that's also, I'm not being rhetorical. Who wants to take a shot? Yes, Prabhu.
Vision of the movement over time?
That's an excellent, great go-to. Great go-to. Let's look at the timeline. I just want to respond to him first, and then I'll get to you. What's your name, Prabhu? Dr. John. Excellent statement. Excellent. Yeah. And straight Mimamsa and straight hermeneutics also. Like Western and Eastern. Everybody who is worth their salt looks at timelines for a chronological evolution in thought. So let's look at the dates. Let's look at the dates. First statement was made in 68. Second statement was maybe made around 70. Last statements were made in 77. All of them. A more pro-Varnashram, like in 74. If you look at Prabhupada's statements, pro-Varnashram, 66 to 73, there's a handful. It's a conversation in Vrindavan in 69, which was more about building community and establishing Varnashram per se. It came up with the Professor Katovsky in 71. He made a statement at the end of 73, a couple things here and there. But starting in 74, Prabhupada began ramping up and his discussion of this topic reached almost a fever pitch by 1977. So yeah, that's an excellent way to go about looking at these statements, and I think a lot of light is shown on the topic. However, and I'm going to attempt to problematize whatever anybody says, just because that's my understanding of my dharma as a lecturer. So I think what you said was excellent. However, Prabhupada in 1936 in The Harmonist speaks about introducing Varnashram Dharma. He speaks about the four ashrams in his League of Devotee prospectus in 1953. I don't know if you guys are aware of this. The seven purposes of ISKCON was originally 14 purposes of ISKCON. 1 month earlier. There's a document called Constitution of Association. And it's a legit document. It's a precursor. And we don't know what happened. At least I don't know what happened. And everybody I talked to, he's been able to, has said they know. It may be out there. Somebody might know. But it seems like Prabhupada originally had 14 purposes of ISKCON, and two of those had four subcategories. And it was a much bigger list. One of them was establishing the caste system. He actually writes the word caste when he says not by birth. And it's in the same, it's a secondary purpose of ISKCON, but it's right up there with promoting a vegetarian diet. So that's also a secondary purpose of ISKCON. And Prabhupada mentions specifically, and people will get enough protein, carbohydrates, fats, and vitamins from that diet. That's like it actually gets a mention in there. And Prabhupada was really ahead of his time. So the statements that it's not possible to establish Varnashram were made around the same time Prabhupada said that one of the purposes of ISKCON was to establish Varnashram, the League of Devotees. That was one of the purposes. It comes up in the Gita Nagari documents in 56. It comes up even a little bit in the Vaisheshastakam that he wrote as an offering to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati in 61. And he was even publishing it during Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's time in The Harmonist, in English. So the idea that you can completely explain what Prabhupada was doing with the chronology, it would depend on Prabhupada thinking no Varnashram and then thinking Varnashram. But before and during that time when he said no Varnashram, he was also saying it was one of his purposes. Did you guys follow that? It looks better on the screen. I'm doing my best. Did you guys follow that? So therefore, I don't think that the chronology itself is sufficient to unpack what Prabhupada says. And just because I've attempted to rebut what you said, you should have a chance to respond in a Matsal Prabhu. Yes?
I'm thinking possibly he had originally this idea for Varnashram. Then when he found what he found, when he came to the States and saw the level of his first devotees, was thinking maybe this is not possible. And then as the movement grew and he saw better quality people coming and with more capability, more abilities, then he said, well, this is possible. So
I heard everything you said and I understood
place it. And circumstance of his decision.
I'm going to press pause with you and I'm going to address what you said later on. Thank you, though. I mean, you're well spoken and articulate and intelligent, and I think you made a nice rejoinder to what I said. Mataji, I would normally call on you, but let's, are you sure? He's a super senior devotee. He's like, and so he raised his hand. I got to stop and like give him the mic. But he's given permission. So yeah, let's have Mataji speak. By the way, just before she speaks, so here's where we're at. We've got these paradoxical statements that are almost diametrically opposed. One thing is let's go earlier and later, but it doesn't work because Prabhupada was all over the map for his entire career in the States and for decades beforehand. And so that by itself isn't going to be enough. One possible explanation is we got more qualified or better class of people came. But what's on the table is how can we reconcile these extremely difficult to reconcile statements? Yes.
So according to the chronological dates, he's given reasons with each one. So that's a very simple one, see? For each one, he gives reason. First he said, when we don't need Varnashram because we are Vaishnavas. He gives that reason. We are Vaishnavas, don't need that. The second, he says, we are Vaishnavas. Humanity is in chaos. That was his words.
I couldn't hear you.
Humanity is in chaos. We are Vaishnavas. Chaos. How do you say it? Chaos. How do you say it? Get it? Okay. So humanity is in chaos. We are Vaishnavas. We don't need it. So the point I'm trying to make is Srila Prabhupada gave reasons each time. Then the third time when he says, the last time, 77, he says, the reason is, why so much fall down? Vaishnav is not so easy. See? So each time he gives reasons, and that's how I'm saying we can reconcile, because obviously the whole purpose is for Lord Chaitanya's movement of Harinam Sankirtan, and it's an elevator method to go back to Godhead, which he's fully convinced, and his idea in the early years, you can see that he wants us all to go back to Godhead. That's why he was just focusing on that, and in the Bhagavatam also, constantly. That is the main point. But then, why so much fall down? So now, we have to give a subsidiary principle.
Thank you. Thank you. We got some more hands going up. Okay. We got Vatsal Prabhu first. Yeah. Okay, sure. By the way, I just, because I want to respond to each person, I think that what you said was very nice. One of the main things you do when trying to understand a statement is you look for context. Bhaktivinoda Thakur made a point. He says, if you show me a statement that supports impersonalism in the Shastra, I will show you within a few verses before or after a statement which qualifies it. And so this is kind of a standard thing which is done by anybody who deeply studies a subject, which is looking at the context. Without going into too much detail, because we've got a lot of hands up, in the same way that I critiqued Bhakta John's initial statement by showing that Prabhupada was saying a wide variety of things all throughout his career, I would also say that Prabhupada's criticism of why Varnashram was impossible to establish was not merely based on the fact that we were Vaishnavas. He had serious reservations about the possibility of establishing Varnashram Dharma that were not simply based on us being transcendental to it. And there's at least half a dozen places I have. And so although I think what you just said adds to the discussion, it's not a slam dunk. But I think you've moved things forward. And Vatsal Prabhu, where are we going now? Yeah, of course.
Your procedure is going to not allow you to complete your topic. I don't know if you're going to be able to respond so lucidly.
I didn't hear the last sentence came from you.
I don't feel that you'll be able to complete your topic.
I got
if
that.
You respond to each person so lucidly.
Okay.
Shorter.
Yes, Marsh.
Cut us off and not necessarily respond.
I can do either one of those, we can just go through as much as we go through. I have about 7 different hermeneutical points, and we can sort of see how many we get to naturally, and I can then go into dissemination of information mode the last 10 minutes and kind of download them. But this way, we can have a more sort of interactive learning environment. I'm open to. I'm not attached to finishing my presentation. I don't have to do this one. I'm happy to even. I think this is. Even enough of a starting point if it's all I got through. But I'm happy to also sing for my supper and do as I'm instructed. So that means, but okay. That was fully Upanishadic. So that's great. Let's help her. You want to say something? All right. Yes, Marsh.
Strategy. Strategy. Why did Prabhupada do this and then do that? Strategy.
He was being strategic.
Yes. Meaning, the beginning, similar to what Mataji said. In the beginning, establish Bhagavad Dharma. Strongly hearing and chanting. And it can take you to the topmost position. Nurturing the faith of his followers all over the world. Strategy. Build that. And then, as he said, half of my work is not done. And it's something similar to what Vatsal Prabhu said this morning, expanding the circle of who we're relatable to. And, as Mataji said, Why are they falling down? They're not chanting their rounds. They're not performing their gayatri. They're not doing the Bhagavad Dharma. So they need a safety net. Doesn't diminish the Bhagavad Dharma. It just expands the circle strategically.
Thank you, Maharaj. Thank you. Well spoken. And I think that you added something to what Maharaj said. I think you built on it. I think it was in the same genre, but you added something, which was that it wasn't that Prabhupada was just trying this and had to switch gears and try something completely different, but rather he had some sort of a grand universal vision. And he, in an almost like military-esque fashion, gained certain strongholds in establishing core elements of Krishna consciousness before filling in some of the supportive structure.
He was strategic. He was our general. He knew where the army was going before we even had an army.
Yes. Yes, I'm agreeing with you, Maharaj. I'm agreeing with you. Vishnu Jam Maharaj, by the way, made the point while discussing Varanashram with Srila Prabhupada. He said, just like when we open a temple, first we go and get a storefront. And then gradually we get a temple, and then eventually we get land and cows and a farm. And Prabhupada said yes. And so he appreciated this idea that we start with something smaller and then develop it. And Varanashram, in that instance, from what Vishnu Jam Swami had said, was the next step. So yeah, that would support what you were saying as well. Yes, Prabhu.
He had different definitions. He used the same word to mean different things at different times, different contexts. So perhaps in the first example that you gave, the Varnashram he speaks of seems to be, from my looking at it, is more traditional Varnashram, more of the type of Varnashram that existed in earlier times. Whereas as he progressed in his own thinking, he began to see a vision of Varnashram that was possible, but it was different from the one that he speaks of in the earlier position.
Well said. Well said, Pancharatna Prabhu. Really nice. So, you know, in Vedanta, there are three types of difference that are generally listed by Shankar and Ramanuja when they're debating on sort of the nature of Brahman. And so one of them is Sajatiya, and then there's Vijatiya, and then there's Swagat. And so distinctions between form and essence, between the best part of something and superfluous elements of it, is a kind of or even everything is Krishna in one sense, but Krishna is an unlimitedly variegated being, and we're part of that. And so there's a real distinction between parts of that whole. Just invoked was that. And so I think it's a really nice contribution, something that no one said so far. So thank you very much for that. It moves things forward. Is that Abhiram Prabhu?
I just want to support Pancharatna's point. Phraseologies tend to become buzz. They become buzzwords. And a buzzword, one way at least to define it, it's a phrase or a concept grasped in a word that everyone accepts without question, as if it's already been worked out. We don't think, just like, I love you. Well, what does that mean? Are you feeling motherly? Are you feeling brotherly?
McDonald's had the slogan, I'm loving it, a couple years ago.
So Varnashram is like that for us. And as Pancharatna was saying, you know, there are different times, also different audiences and different purposes. If you mention the word Varnashram amongst the liberal intellectuals of India today, you're likely to be stoned and thrown out of the room, as it's become such an abomination and such a tool of oppression and abuse. Whereas if you talk to a genuine Vedic scholar, you'll have a very different perspective.
Thank you. And just to run with this for a second, and also honor my Guru Jenna, who asked me to hurry up and get moving. And I'm going to come back to this point and offer kind of my own thoughts on how to resolve two very, very different statements. Here's another group of statements by Prabhupada. A Vaishnava is a self-realized one, a Brahmana. A Vaishnava automatically becomes a Brahmana. A Vaishnava is automatically a Brahmana. As soon as one initiates a Vaishnava, he automatically becomes a Brahmana. Etc., etc. I've got dozens of quotes like this. And then here's another. Here's some more quotes. Why are you... Here's... Not that a Shudra man is forced to become a Brahmana. Even if he remains a Shudra and does accordingly, he'll get the same position as devotee. Why should a Shudra artificially become a Brahmana? Let him remain a Shudra, and if he follows the rules and regulations, he's as good as a Brahmana. But even if he remains a Shudra, he's a Vaishnava. That particular statement is really significant because it's very difficult to dismiss. By the way, Jadu Thakur is called a Shudra Vaishnava in the Chaitanya Charitamrita by Krishnadas Kaviraj. And so, and great personalities in Vrindavan that were from lower castes were called Shudra Mahajan. So the term Shudra is used in relationship to Vaishnavas in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and here by Srila Prabhupada. But we just read so many statements that he's a Brahmana, he's automatically a Brahmana. Why artificially he should be called a Brahmana? Let him do according to Shastra, the work of a Shudra Vaishya, he'll get perfect. Perfection is not checked in a big scale. You can't make all of them Brahmanas and sannyasis. It's not possible. In big scale, you cannot make all of them Brahmanas or sannyasis. No, that is not possible. Oh, 2:14, Valentine's Day. So, you have here some really strong statements, kind of like opposite statements. And I think the simple resolution is that the term Brahmana has two different meanings. So what is it? Brahma jana, jana titi brahmanaha. So one is a Brahmana if he knows Brahman. Kind of a standard definition. I think it probably traces back to Panini. And so, if one knows Brahman, he's a Brahmana. At the same time, the word Brahmana is used to indicate a priest, like a cleric, someone who serves a congregation as a minister and performs religious rituals on behalf of a community. So when Prabhupada says that all Vaishnavas are Brahmanas, he means in the important sense that they know Brahman and more. He actually says that they're more than Brahmanas. Because they know Brahman. But it's not that every Vaishnava who comes, especially on a large scale, is necessarily going to become a priest, even if they get initiated. How many of you serve as temple priests? Like how many of you like perform the function of a cleric for a congregation, of a clergyman for a clergywoman for a congregation? But many of us are probably initiated. We may have jobs outside doing this or that. So by understanding the same word in two distinct ways, it resolves what otherwise would be quite a strong contradiction. And springboarding off of that, back to the original question, my resolution was very much kind of falling in line with what others have said. And I think, you know, you guys demonstrated your dexterity and ability pierce through apparent paradoxes to a deeper resolution. But I would say this, and actually Prabhupada's on record talking to Professor Katovsky about this. He says, our point is we're not going to bring back the old type of Hindu society. It's not that. He's in 1971. It's not that. Professor Kotowski, it's impossible. Prabhupada, it's impossible. Our idea is that the best ideas from the original idea. See, Varna Ashram, I mean, I don't know how familiar you guys are with like kind of like class systems, but there were the three estates of the Middle Ages. There was the papacy and the priests at the top. This is what led Diderot to say he wouldn't be happy until the last priest was strangled, or the last king was strangled with the entrails of the last priest. There were the two primary estates. There was the priest, there was the kings, and then there was everybody else. And the merchants and peasants got lumped together, which of course upsets merchants who had their own class. Actually, Plato did more or less the same thing in the Republic 2,500 years ago, not too long after the time of the Buddha. Actually, Buddha has a chapter in the Dhammapada. The last chapter in the Dhammapada is who is a Brahmana. Even he was kind of like co-opting this language and using it to spread his mission, give his message. But anyway, the idea of class systems is sort of as old as time, and Prabhupada made this point. Our system of Varnashram Dharma is given by Krishna, so Prabhupada wasn't really so quick to dismiss it because it had a divine origin. He was very strong on accepting Shastra and teaching us to accept Shastra. At the same time, he did not want to reinstitute the old system, in some sort of like a millenarian type fashion where we're going to go back to the golden age and everything's going to be like it was, like we're going to be like, you know, Luddites, and we're going to like, you know, start making our own nails at the blacksmith and just kind of completely go back to the way culture was previously. And that's very clear from Prabhupada's mission, from this conversation with Professor Katovsky, and from his a myriad of statements he made. But there was something in Varnashram that was beautiful, that had merit, an essence, a core, the best ideas in Prabhupada's language, the best practices. And we got to distill what those are and bring them back. Of course, this gives us a tremendous amount, and I'm going to sort of segue into wrapping things. I got a late start, but I can still finish on time. What would you like me to do? Okay, the milk thing is on topic too. And this is my pet project, but I can just do this. We'll keep going with this and we'll see where we go. I'm not attached. Prabhupada did evolve. Prabhupada did evolve. And I'm going to run for a minute with this. Actually, we have a very heavy critique of Varnashram in the Ramananda Samvad, Sadhana Sadhya Tattva. You guys know this? Sadhya Sadhana Tattva. In the 8th chapter of Madhya Leela, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu speaks with Ramananda Roy, who suggests Varnashram as being the way to please Krishna because it leads to Vishnu Bhakti, and you can do things as Bhakti to Vishnu by following your Dharma, your Ashram, Varna and Ashram Dharma, and Mahaprabhu rejects it. And he says it's external, and he asks him for more. Of course, he rejects everything up until you get to Manjari Bhav and Manjari Seva. At a certain point, he actually says there's nothing in the Shastra. I have a poem I wrote, and that's like where he ultimately has to go to his own poetry, his own Rasik poetry, using the rules of Sanskrit dramaturgy, breath, sensibilities of love between the soul and God. But the first thing to get thrown by the wayside is Varnashram Dharma. And Prabhupada comments that Sarva Dharmam Priyaja is a rejection of Varnashram, so it's there in the Gita as well. It's there in the Gita as well. And the Kaitava Dharma, that's Prayujita, Prabhupada also mentions that's Varnashram Dharma. I've got the quotes. I'm going to try and move a little faster now. Did you follow this? Varnashram is the Kaitava Dharma, the cheating religion, which is rejected in the Bhagavatam in the second verse, according to Srila Prabhupada.
Where did you say
that? All right. You're the one who told me to roll, Maharaj. And now I'm trying to gain some momentum, and I'm getting like proof texted. And that's normally why I proceed slowly and meticulously, so I don't get jammed up like this, and I'm trying to gain momentum. But I'm okay. We can do it.
What
Send it to me later.
No, Maharaj, I'm not going to do that now. Come on. You called me out. You called my bluff. Dharma is duty. This is conversation 212-75. You want me to read it to you? I'm going to read it to you anyway. Dharma is duty. Varnashram dharma, that is also given up. That means the only duty becomes to Krishna consciousness. He said sarva dharmam priyaja. In the beginning he said, I appear to reestablish the principle of religion. So Prabhupada is now paraphrasing Krishna. Dharma samstapanartaya. At the last stage, and this again is the same principle, dharmam priyaja, reject all dharma. I mean, the insanity of that statement coming from Krishna in a primary text of Hinduism is almost like inconceivable. To say, give up all dharma, it's like so subversive and like powerful and beautiful and like earth-shattering. That means the so-called dharmas, a religion which is going on in the world, they're not real. And the Bhagavatam therefore says, dharma prayujita kaitabo atra. So it's all there in one statement. And he says it, varnashram. He names what's being rejected, and he gives quotes. So see, it's one thing if we can show some acharya in his tika, or we can explain that this is what the Sanskrit means. But we have Prabhupada here engaging. Prabhupada was an exegete. He engaged with the text. He unpacked its meaning. And we have him here on record giving us his understanding. His critique of varnashram was substantial. It was substantial. And it was following in the wake of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Roy's conversation. We come from a long... It used to be that Brahmanas would take to Vaishnavism, take Diksha, become Babaji's, and take off their Brahman thread. That was the standard for centuries. To prove their transcendence, they would give up all those trappings. They didn't even take sannyas. They did bake dharan. They took a form of renunciation. I mean, even our Bhuta Shuddhi, which by the way is a tantra agamic practice that you find all over Shaiva and Vaishnava literature, but our Bhuta Shuddhi that we say before we go on the altar. Naham vipranachana apatirna pina vaishana shudra. It's right there. The kiba vipra kiba nasi shudra kenina. Why not a shudra? That they can become guru also. These statements are so unbelievably subversive and they fly in the face of varnashram dharma. It's a core part of our tradition. Any serious conversation of varnashram dharma has to acknowledge that we are from a bhakti agama, which is really a fancy way of saying tantra, form-breaking, Upanishadic, revelatory, ecstatic, savant, lover of Krishna tradition. Where anything is possible by the grace of God. And the Bhagavatam is strong on these points. A dog eater can perform a yajna. I mean, you think about that. You think about that. This is what we mean when we say Krishnaika Sharanam, that there's one swarup lakshana, there's one fundamental characteristic of a Vaishnava, that he surrendered to Krishna, and the other 25 are secondary. It's all over our literature, and any serious discussion of varnashram dharma can never deviate from this point. I'm getting inspired here. That's why I don't like to do this stuff, because it's like that I don't get a chance to kind of get on my soapbox. You're really going to get me now? Yeah, of course, Prabhu. I'm never going to say no. Anybody kind of in that area, there's no chance of me saying no. You can just yell at me the whole day and I'm going to go with it.
I'm concerned about this quote of Mahaprabhu rejecting varnashram. In the context, he was rejecting it. He was bringing Ramananda Roy to the highest platform. In that regard, he would have rejected the presentation of householder life.
Let me read something to you. I got you.
Householder life is rejected.
I understood your objection. I'm going to read something, and you can tell me if you still got the objection, we'll continue to tackle it. I was going to read this anyway. Varnashram has no relationship with pure devotional service. And it won't help you to transcendentally serve Krishna. Thus, Lord Chaitanya rejected Ramananda Roy's proposal. Because in the age of Kali, the Varnashram Dharma is so degraded, any attempt to restore to its original position will be hopeless. He rejected Varnashram Dharma because it has no value in relation to pure devotional service. It has no value in relation to pure devotional service. The second more important consideration, so for Prabhupada somehow that was like, that was like his opening objection. The second most important consideration is that even if Varnashram is observed strictly, it still cannot help one to rise to the highest plane of transcendental service to Godhead. Even if Varnashram is observed strictly, it still can't help you. Lord Chaitanya's teachings are beyond Varnashram Dharma. They're Bhagavat Dharma. They destroy all cheating processes of religion. There again, Varnashram Dharma is cheating religion. This is from In Search of the Ultimate Goal of Life, which is a manuscript Prabhupada wrote in 1959 based on the Ramananda Sambha before he translated the teachings of Lord Chaitanya and then eventually the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It was a manuscript that was discovered at the Radha Damodar temple by Jagat Guru Swami, who later became Nisringa Maharaj, and he published it some decades back. But it's an English manuscript of Srila Prabhupada. Here's Prabhupada in the intro to his original Jaladutta Bhagavatams. In the opinion of the Lord, the system of Varnashram is superficial only. And it has very little to do with the highest realization of spiritual values. The system of Varnashram is more or less based on moral and ethical principles. There's very little realization of the transcendence as such. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected it as superficial. Yes?
You're running out of time, and I just want to know if you're going to talk about Daivi.
Daiva.
Or Daiva.
It's a derivative of Deva, means godly or divine. Daivi would be the feminine, but Varnashram is not in the feminine. So I believe it. And you're not alone. Everybody says Daivi. I don't know why. I'm not sure why. I only found it one time in the Veda base, and I was assuming that it was one of the... All the times Prabhupada mentioned it was Daiva, and I'm assuming that... This term comes from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. For the most part, Prabhupada took Daiva Varnashram as being not based on birth. That's how Prabhupada exclusively used the term Daiva Varnashram Dharma. Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself in Jiva Dharma and other places gives a more expanded vision of it. But Prabhupada's treatment of the subject of Daiva Varnashram was that it's Varnashram but not based on birth, and that's what makes it Daiva versus Asura. And Asura, of course, meaning demoniac Varnashram. So Prabhupada, in using these terms, focused on the non-birth-based. There are other elements that could be Daiva about a Varnashram, that it led to Krishna Bhakti, what have you, or that was supportive of Krishna Bhakti, that was part of like a more full-fledged movement. But that's an initial response. Is that okay? Can I get back to what I'm...
There'll be more.
Okay. I have heaps to say. I want to get this done. Statements like this, from His Divine Grace's lotus lips, are why I feel it's important to keep in mind our tradition and Srila Prabhupada's strong, sustained, traditional Gaudiya Vaishnav critique of Varnashram Dharma and all things less than pure bhakti as being sufficient in and of itself. It's how they read Sarva Dharmam Priyaja. It's how they read Dharma Projita Kaitabha. It's how they read these texts. It's what our ears, and it's what Srila Prabhupada said. And so I want to honor that by saying it emphatically and loudly before attempting a reconciliation. Here's another fun one. Bhagavad Dharma means the Dharma of the soul. Ordinary Dharma means the Dharma of the body. So this Varnashram Dharma is in relationship with this body, but we're not this body. But when you come to the platform of the soul, that Dharma, when it begins, that Dharma of the soul is called Bhagavad Dharma. So now we have Varnashram Dharma and Bhagavad Dharma are being contrapositioned. Here's another statement by Prabhupada. Around the same time, Bhagavad Dharma means living according to the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay, so the Dharma that derives from Bhagavan is Bhagavad Dharma. So Bhagavat, which becomes Bhagavan, and then the Dharma which is about that person becomes Bhagavad Dharma. Bhagavad Dharma means living according to the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, listen carefully. You don't want to miss this one. In Bhagavad Gita, we find the Supreme Lord has arranged human society in four social divisions. Therefore, Bhagavad Dharma means Varnashram Dharma. And just in case of the four social and four spiritual divisions, like, so here you have Prabhupada saying, I don't know if you missed that, I'm going to say it again. Prabhupada says, Bhagavad Dharma is about the soul, Varnashram Dharma is about the body. When you're done with that and you're ready for this, that's Bhagavad Dharma. Around the same time, he says, Bhagavad Dharma means Varnashram Dharma. How do you resolve that? Okay. No, that was being rhetorical there. I was being rhetorical. If it's okay with you. But if you want to seriously talk about Varnashram, and here, listen to Prabhupada. Prabhupada is an expert theologian. Listen to his logic. It's super tight. Dharma is duty. Okay, fine. He's building on the term Dharma. He's giving a definition of the term Dharma. Okay, Dharma is duty. Hang on. It means living according to the instructions of Bhagavan, of God. Okay, sure. Bhagavad Dharma means living according to the instructions of Bhagavat. Sure. In the Gita, we find, so now if we want to know what God's instructions to us are, in the Gita we find Varnashram Dharma. Therefore, Bhagavad Dharma, following God, means following Varnashram Dharma. Do you follow that? He's engaging with the text in a persuasive, well-reasoned way. As a Brahmana, Vaishnava, pure devotee who has an incredible command of the Shastra. So, we've got these statements, and here's an attempt to resolve them. Here's Prabhupada. Our position is different. And I almost don't think there's any way to say it better than this. I've got a whole paragraph here I'm going to read. And hopefully it'll answer almost all the questions that I've tried to raise so that the answer will make sense. Our position is different. We're trying to implement Krishna consciousness in everything. Think Yukta Vairagya. If you can use computers for Krishna, why can't you use Varnashram Dharma? It's obviously at least as good. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally took sannyas. Even Mahaprabhu participated. He can criticize it, but he still participated. And why did he participate? Because no one would listen to him. That's what Prabhupada says. So he took sannyas. Anybody listens up? Just like in the Hare Krishna movement. He rejected completely material, niskinchana. Kinchit means something. Niskinchana means not something. Means like nothing. You have nothing. It's like somebody has nothing. We're not going to be niskinchana. It's a really heavy statement. Vaishnavas are often known. Vaishnavas are often known as niskinchana. Sharanagata, niskinchana. These are terms of glorification for the Vaishnavas. We're not going to be Niskinchana. We're trying to cement the troubled position of the... And Prabhupada's voice trails off, the conversation breaks. That is also the prescription of Gita. We're not rejecting the whole society. Mahaprabhu rejected everything. He was simply interested in the internal, the spiritual. But our duty is that we shall arrange the external affairs so nicely that one day they'll come to the spiritual platform very easily, paving the way. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, personality like that, they have nothing to do with the material world. But we are preaching. We are preaching. Therefore, we must pave the situation in such a way that gradually they'll be promoted to the spiritual plane. Jiva Goswami says he wants the association of sadhara and mahatmas, ordinary mahatmas. Because the great Uttam Bhagavats don't preach to you because everything's perfect already. Jiva Goswami says that the sadhara and mahatma will correct you and chastise you when you make a mistake because he comes to the Madhyam Bhagavat platform. Therefore, he's our best friend. And so Prabhupada's making a point like this. We are preaching. We must pay the situation in such a way that gradually they'll be promoted to the spiritual plane. It's very difficult to bring, introduce Varnashram. But at least there must be some idea. Just like in the university, no one's going to study higher mathematics, higher English literature. No one goes even in your country. The classes are almost vacant. But still the government does not close it. The expenditure is high. But there's no student, no income. Prabhupada's almost making the point here that like we have to leave no stone unturned and we have to do something to help suffering humanity. And his exploration of Varnashram Dharma was an attempt by him to kind of leave no stone unturned in his attempt to give people some engagement, to bring people to Krishna consciousness. He did not forget the standard Vaishnava critiques of Varnashram. They were still in place. But this core of compassion was at the heart of his forays into Varnashram Dharma. And this whole thing of like, the expense might be high, you know, Varnashram kind of like has a, it's like your Varna is determined by your vritti, by what you do for work. If you get a paycheck, you're a Shudra. It's like you have to be in business for yourself, otherwise you're a Shudra. The security of getting a paycheck means you're a Shudra for Prabhupada. And so, Varnashram Dharma itself has its own vritti. It depends on an agrarian society. Otherwise it becomes something of a luxury item. Like deity worship is a luxury item. We value this. And so we spend thousands of dollars every month doing it. And we all support the devotees who do it. And like we make an economy for deity worship where deity worship makes sense financially. But it's not that like they're producing something. You follow? They're not engaged in some kind of like Marxian, you know, means of production. They're worshiping the deity and we value it. So we patronize it and we subsidize it and we make it viable. Varnashram Dharma in the beginning is going to be like that too. Taking care of cows is kind of like taking care of a deity and a dog. It's kind of like right in between those two things. It's like a living thing. It's not quite as easy as taking care of a dog. I had a dog when I was a kid growing up, so I know how much work goes into that. Taking care of cows is more work than that. It's kind of like a deity, but it's not quite as laborious as a deity either. And so we do all sorts of stuff. We put in time doing things. If Varnashram is important, if we have faith in Prabhupada's vision, listen to this one. Here's Prabhupada again. This was spoken by Prahlad Maharaj in the Sringadeva. He's quoting, "My concern is only for the fools and rascals who are making elaborate plans for material happiness. I'm simply concerned with love for them," end quote. Business has become like Prahlad Maharaj. We can chant anywhere. That's all right. Krishna will provide everything. We have no business to do. But we have to take them because we are sympathizer. That so many people are being killed by this modern civilization. They had the opportunity to be Krishna conscious, but by the setup of this rascal civilization, they're being killed spiritually. Therefore, we have to take it. Devotee personally has no problem, but he pushes himself and is degraded society to teach them how to live, how to become gentlemen. Therefore, otherwise we have no business. But if we don't give them the opportunity, they'll not be able to come to Krishna consciousness. It will be good for you because Krishna will see, oh, here is my devotee. He's doing so much for me. Your service will be recognized by Krishna. Don't think that because you're teaching a Shudra how to work like this, you've become a Shudra. You're not Shudras. Any circumstances, even though you teach a Shudra how to work like a Shudra, don't misunderstand. Clearly understand what is the purpose. Is there a doubt or is it clear? That's on the Varnashram College Walk on March 14th, night 4. Srila Prabhupada came to the West and he engaged us in the core practices of Krishna consciousness, which are universally accepted by our tradition and have been promoted as being sufficient. He was really disappointed when we fell down. He stopped marriages. According to Rabindranath Tharoor, we stopped marriages for 1 year in ISKCON. Wouldn't allow Rabindranath Tharoor to authorize any marriages for an entire year because he was so disgusted by the fact that his Western disciples were getting divorced. In the beginning, to be a leader, you had to get married. Rabindranath Tharoor said this. I'm quoted from somebody who was there at the time. If you want to become a manager in ISKCON and you want to be a brahmachari, you'd say, oh, like Bhakti Siddhanta, they say, you think you can be a brahmachari like Bhakti Siddhanta? You have to get married, take a position in the society. Prabhupada said in 1971 in Mumbai, my Guru Maharaj made sannyasis and couldn't conquer London, but I've conquered London with 3 grihastha couples. Therefore, he made sannyasis, I'm making grihasthas. But then people were cheating on their wives and husbands and like making a mockery out of it. And for an Indian, getting divorced is like almost like eating meat or something like that. It was like the divorce rate in India today is 1%. Back then it was like, I doubt Prabhupada knew one single person who was divorced his entire life. I mean, I went to India for the first time in 90. It's changed so much in 25 years. I walked, you know, all around India by foot. It's changed so much. 25 years I've been going there. What to speak of when Prabhupada was there in the 20s and 30s and 40s. He stopped all marriages and it was the brahmachari sannyasi time. And then even that had problems. They had to kind of like navigate that in 75 in Mayapur. The same thing happened with fall downs. His leaders were falling down. He was trying to figure out what to do about it. One thing he implemented was the Bhakti Shastri. He had this idea that education was going to be the key. And the other thing was Varnashram Dharma. He was trying to... So it wasn't that we were so qualified. It was that we were so unqualified to stop the carnage. And it's at one point, you know, and Varnashrams for him was farms. I have a lot of quotes today. This whole presentation establishes that the first foray into Varnashram is farms. And Prabhupada said farm means cow protection. He says Varnashram means farm, farm means cow, therefore Varnashram means cow. And he's got a whole logic behind it. And he says do it at any cost. At one point he said farm, 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 farm. It's not my instruction, it's Krishna's instruction. And if you do it, you'll make the whole world redundant. He had this beautiful vision of farms that like it would teach people about Braj Bhakti. Simple, unadulterated, pure love for Krishna. It was Krishna's culture was farming. He called Krishna the farmacharya. He said, haven't you seen Balaram carrying a plow? He said the basic principle of New Vrindavan is cow protection. He had these amazing ideas about connecting the farms to the cities by selling our produce and ghee to our restaurants so there'd be some income. It was kind of like leaving no stone unturned. And then one point I'll make also was that Prabhupada was quite exploratory. This is easily demonstrated. Prabhupada at one point said, I have given you the idea, you're all intelligent, you can do. And according to Abhiram Prabhu, I think I actually talked to you about this. I read it, and then we talked about last October when I talked to him. I was in India. Prabhupada told me he was lamenting that he hadn't finished everything. He left it to us. We got to use our brains, figure out how to jump forward. So we did our little thing. All of our milk comes from our farm for the last 12 years. We don't use a single drop of dairy that doesn't come from our own cows. We tighten our belts. We provide our deities with dairy every single day. Nice milk sweets, burfi, sweet rice, yogurt. Not right now, because we have Mahaprabhu deity, so we don't offer him yogurt during Chaturmas. Because Mahaprabhu follows Ekadasi, Chaturmas. But yeah, it costs money. And we do it. I'm just going to talk for a while. It costs money, but we do it because it's important. Just like deity worship is important. Just like book distribution is important. I got so many things I decided are important in my life. I just make time for them. And so the problem we have is we don't really understand that this was, and obviously a Vaishnava never dies, this was Prabhupada's last dying wish. And so if we don't do it, who's going to do it? And there's no rigid structure set up. There's no guaranteed do it this way or that way. Prabhupada, he said, repeatedly, I'm giving you the idea. This is the principle. At one point, they were trying to like dial it in. Prabhupada says, why are you bringing the temples and this and that? I'm discussing the idea. He said, and his logic was this, on a small scale, we make a few brahmanas. He actually told Professor Katovsky in 1971 that all of our people become brahmanas. They give up their occupation of kshatriyas and vaishyas. There's another spanner in the works from the quotes I gave. But then later on he said, on a small scale you can bring. On a small scale. But on a big scale you won't be able to do. You can't bring. You can't make everybody a brahmana and a sannyasi. He had this vision. People come. And so I have kind of, you know, sort of four ideas about how Varnashrama practically manifests. And I'll wrap it up with this on time. Even though I started late.
We'll give you another 5 minutes.
Okay, well it's 12:12. I got three. I just need three.
Okay.
I just need three. On one hand, ISKCON is a church. It's a religious organization. A collection of churches. We have congregation. And we become brahmanas so we can be clergy and we guide people in their lives. And if you look at most people's experience of ISKCON, that's what it is. You have your local temple, you go, maybe you become clergy yourself, or you go on Sundays or during the week, you do service, you give charity, and it occupies the same place in your life that, you know, churches used to occupy for pious people in the U.S. before everybody got impious in the postmodern period. And in that sense, we become brahmanas, and then we minister to people, and we help them with their lives. We do samskaras for them. We guide them. That's one level of varnashram. And it's real. It's a big chunk of what we do. Another one is we do a mini varnashram in the temple. And Prabhupada was super clear about this, that we were supposed to do this in the temple with the devotees. And that can be really easy. You see, if somebody's a manager, let him manage. You see somebody who's a pujari, let him be a pujari. You see a good preacher, let him preach. You see anybody who can like, figure it out. Get a restaurant so you got some people can like work who can't do anything. You know what I mean? Like you figure it out. And you kind of have employment opportunities for people. So they can come and we can give them stuff to do. So they don't have to like come, hang out for a couple years, and then go back out into the cruel world to make their way and just come on Sundays. That's another level. It's like a mini varnashram. And it can be real simple. Or it can get more elaborate. On a farm, we can do a much more full exploration of it. Prabhupada was so happy when he heard they had a village council that decided like disputes between devotees in New Vrindavan in 69. And Prabhupada was like, this is very nice. He wanted that kind of village culture. And you can only really do that in an agrarian setting. You see, and even in this country, in these very, very small unincorporated areas, they have this kind of stuff. They have a name for them in Pennsylvania too. I'm trying to remember the name of it. Anyway, they have a name for these. They're not a city, but they're not unincorporated. They're kind of like in between. Another level is he wanted us to become a head for society. He talked about headless society. He wanted to make brahmanas. So we go out in the world and influence heads of state. We don't necessarily have to reorganize the system, but we can go and influence big people like George Harrison and Nelson Mandela, or whoever it might be, who's got some prominence. And that way we're acting as brahmanas, but on a much larger scale. And that's us becoming a head of society. And at the final level, he was hoping that we would set an example and that society might even reorganize itself a little bit. that was kind of like Prabhupada's bluest sky thinking. And so we've already got the temple thing down. We've already got the temple thing. We've got to figure out a way to keep membership coming in and stay relevant in whatever culture or country we happen to find ourselves in. To some extent, like Russia and China, really what happened was when some of the communist elements of that government fell down, the secret police were really the ones who took over and became the new oligarchs. And we find that Krishna consciousness is flourishing like anything in these countries. It's almost like a reverse. It's like the popes fell down, then the feudal kings came up, then the bourgeois and the capitalists, and then finally the serfs and the communists. And that's working its way back up to capitalism and back up to where the Kshatriyas are taking control again. And we find that we can get patronage from them, and we don't threaten them too much, and we don't try and become too political. We can thrive in those countries, kind of on their way back up the Varnashram ladder. But anyway, our churches are there. Our temples are there. They seem fairly well established. The mini Varnashram thing, even at a local temple level, we still need to work on. The farm thing is where we really need to focus. And if we want to be able to influence society and take over the world, at least we can set some kind of small-scale example. And so for me, it's real simple. Just stop drinking milk that comes from slaughtered animals because it's indefensible. And buy milk from Gita Nagari. Buy milk from Gita Nagari. They'll ship you all over the world. Or get yourself a cow. If you get a cow, you have to get land. You have to put some resources into it and spend some money. But we all spend money on stuff anyway. So spend some money on this. Protecting cows forces you to get land. You know, now you have land, you got a garden. Bhumi, when Bhumi appeared in front of Pariksit Maharaj, it was in the form of a cow. This connection between the cow and the land is almost mystical. Just commit. I'm in Laguna Beach. It's like the swankest place in the U.S. We got a farm. All our milk comes from our cows. We're the first temple on the planet that went completely ahimsa. Even Mayapur and Vrindavan hadn't done it. Budapest came after us. It's not that big of a deal. You can do it. And then the least you can, we'll finish with this. This is my call to action. I was installing some Gaura-Nitya deities last weekend on Sunday. Somebody made me do this like the day after Janmashtami and Prabhupada's appearance. Dad had to go and zip over to somebody's house. And we brought all the dairy products from the temple so we could bathe the deity in pure milk. And so one of the very wealthy members of our community, who I've known since he was probably 4 or 5 years old, who's now, you know, in his 30s, he said to me, "Hey, like, what can I do, like, with the whole, like, if I don't have a cow myself, what can I do?" And I said, "Oh, go buy milk from Gita Nagari, or buy milk from us." And he goes, "Well, what if I don't want to do that?" And I said, "Then stop drinking milk." He's like, "Well, what?" And I'm like, "You ever heard that story about the fly and Kali? You guys know that story? Guy had to go sacrifice a goat to Kali, but he didn't want him because it was too bloody. So he said, "Hey, Kali, you know, can I offer you like a lesser animal? All right, give me a chicken." He's like, "The chickens are running everywhere. They're so hard to catch." He's like, "All right, offer me a fly." He's like, "There's so many flies everywhere. Just take one. Like, why do I have to offer it to you?" So this person, like, what did they want me to say? Like, they wanted me to give them permission to, like, eat slaughterhouse dairy? You want to do some Varnashram? Put your money where your mouth is. Step up. You got a community here. Support it. You know, my idea is first revitalize the communities that Prabhupada set up. He had so much faith in these communities. We've gone backwards since he left the planet instead of forwards. He wanted every temple to have a farm. But he personally established these communities in the Northeast Quadrant. Get together and support them. And things will come from that. Okay. Thank you very much for your kind attention. I'm happy to talk all day, but I'm getting the Swami's tap on his watch, so I got to go. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna, Jai Shri Prabhupada.